Om Parthaya Pratibodhitam Bhagavata Narayanena Swayam Vyasena Kratitam Purana Munina Madhye Mahabharatam Advaitamritavarshinim Bhagavatim Ashtadashadhyayinim Ambatvamanusantatami Bhagavad Gita Bhagavadveshini.
Actually, in our last week we did verse 24, so we're on verse 25. Thought we were on verse 24, but we're not, we're on 25. I'll refer back to 24 then. So verse 25. Yanti devavrata devan Yanti devavrata devan Pitrinyanti pitrivrataha Pitrinyanti pitrivrataha Bhutani yanti bhutejaha Bhutani yanti bhutejaha Yanti medyajinupimam Yanti madhyajinupimam Yanti devavrataha Devan Pitrin Yanti pitravrataha Bhutani Yanti Bhuta Bhuta Ijaha Yanti Mat Yajinaha Api Mam. In the verse 24, the previous verse, Bhagavan says, actually, that he actually, indeed, means, aham sarvya jnanam bhokta cha prabhu eva cha. He says, in fact, I am the one who enjoys, I am the one who receives all of the yajnas, all of the rituals. And in fact, I am the Prabhu, I am the Lord of all of the rituals. What that means is, doing these yajnas and rituals, one is always evoking a devata. You're doing a ritual. Oh, I know this. Sorry. Okay. Okay. Anyway, Prabhu, when all of these different yajnas and rituals are done in India and all of the pujas, usually a devata, for a yajna, fire ritual, a devata is being invoked for certain, in order for certain particular results. But the actual devata is being prayed to in order to gain those results. And so here, Krishna says, in fact, I am the one who receives all of these yajnas, all of these rituals, and I am the Lord of all of the rituals. Means I'm the karma puladatta. I am the one who gives the results of all of the rituals. Even if you're praying to Agni, or you're praying to Ganesha, or you're doing a ritual evoking a given deity, that deity is the karma puladatta, the giver of the fruits of the actions through me. In other words, in the end, I'm the one that gives all of the results of all actions, and I'm the one who receives the results of all actions also, and the results of all sense perceptions. So in the end, everything comes to me, and I'm the Lord of the whole. And he says, the problem is, this is the problem, he says, but people not knowing me as I am, he says, natu mam abhijananti, tatvena. Tatvena means in reality, as I am. The people not knowing me as I am, they fall away from me. In other words, even though all of them are doing their dharma, performing these rituals, living a dharmic life, they're setting their sights on things that are within samsara, like let me have the new car, or let me have this new thing, or that thing, or this thing. Let me accomplish this, or let me accomplish that. all of these accomplishments and all of these attainments exist within samsara, within duality, whereas in fact I am the one who is the self of the whole thing. And so if as a jiva I'm trying to gain my ananda or gain my wholeness through the acquisition of something, in fact I'm moving in the wrong direction, in a sense, in terms of what I'm actually seeking. So all that Krishna is saying here is in fact all beings are only seeking me. They're seeking the wholeness and the fullness that is me, the ananda or the love that is me. But if I'm seeking that wholeness in an object, in other words, I'm praying to a given deity, I'm doing a ritual to a given deity so that I can attain this, I'll go ahead and attain this. These rituals are efficacious. They can result in whatever I'm trying to achieve. But in the achieving that, in a sense, I'm going in the opposite direction. Because what in reality you're trying to gain is me, the one who is the ananda, the fullness that you actually seek. And so that was that verse 24. And so then he goes on about this. He says, the yanti means they go, devavritaha, those people who are committed to different devas, different deities, then they go to those devas upon death. You know, when they leave this body, if they spent a lifetime of doing rituals and prayers to a given deity, then they will, upon death, achieve the loka or achieve the world where that deity is. They'll go there. If, on the other hand, if they're pitranyanti, pitravritaha, if they're people who are committed to the pitras are the means, the ancestors. If they do worship and ritual to various the ancestors, they'll go to, upon death, they'll go to that loka or that world where the pitras are. It's called a pitraloka. And that world, it's another one of the higher lokas where the level of ananda that you gain in that loka is greater than here, but it's still limited, right? But anyway, so they want to go to the world of the ancestors, of their ancestors, so they do rituals and prayers and austerities, you know, for the sake of those ancestors, then upon death they'll go and they'll join them there. In that world, we're still in samsara, whether you go to a devaloka, the indraloka, whatever devaloka is there, or you go to the loka of the ancestors. Or he says, bhutani yanti bhute jaha, those who worship the different bhutas. The bhutas are like different spirits and ghosts, or different, like the rakshasas, or the a group of ganas, or there's a whole, the yakshas, there's all different types of spirit beings. Even Ganesha, Ganapati, when Ganapati is being worshipped as the leader of the ganas, which is a group of spirits, you know, like Shiva's army, then Ganesha as the leader of those ganas, then he's considered a bhuta. If you're worshipping Ganesha as a form of Ishwara, that's different. You know, like Vishnu or Ganesha or Krishna or Shiva or Saraswati, when you're invoking them as a form of Ishwara, that's different than if you're invoking somebody like Ganapati, and in your vision, Ganapati is the leader of the ganas. And so then he can be viewed as a bhuta, as a spirit, as a certain type of spirit being. And so if you're worshipping the different spirits, and you know, in the Vedic culture, these are just different objects of worship. So if you're worshipping one of the Buddhas, say Rakshasa or Yaksha or whatever it may be, or one of the Ganas, then you attain that world and you are with them. You know, say you want to join the world of the Yakshas, which are spirit beings, then you're born as a Yaksha and you participate in their group. Okay. So these are not mumukshas, right? They're people that think, like, just like, oh, I would love to have a horse farm, you know. Mm. I would love to go to Swargaloka. Or I want to be with Indra in Indraloka. Or I want to go to Yamaloka and be with Yama. You know, or I want to be with Ganesha as a Ganapati. I want to be one of the Ganas. I want to be one of the Ganas led by Ganapati, you know. Or I want to be with my ancestors. I have a desire for that. And so then I do pujas and whatnot, worshipping these different types of devatas in order to get to their world. So all Krishna is saying here, if, and we'll see later, if with Shraddha, you know, you do these rituals with this sankalpa, with this end in mind, with a vrata, means a commitment, to either the particular devas or a commitment of vritta to the ancestors or to the pitras, the ancestors, or to the different bhutas, then that's where you will go. But then he says, then yanti madhyajinaha apimam, and as well, those people who have a commitment to me, are worshipping me, those people will go to me. And here, me, he means as Vishnu, as Paramatma, as Ishwara. And the difference is that for the first group, what those people are worshipping is someone, an object, a being, within samsara. And so you as a jiva will go to that loka, to that world, where that being is, or where that devata is, or where those pitras are, or where those bhutas are. So you're just going to a higher level of samsara. And what we mean by a higher level is where there's more ananda, right? Where the level, higher level means the level of happiness that you enjoy is better. But it's still limited, and when the punya runs out, you come back. You know, that's another thing so different than the West. For us, the punya that you accrue will give you a vacation, Swamiji will say. Those are your vacation chits. Yeah. And you will be able to go to that world, depending on how many punya chits you have. You will go to that world, and you can stay there until those chits run out. And then you come back. Because any type of karma that you do to produce a result will produce a result that's equivalent to the action that got you there. And so any action that you do is limited, so the result will also be limited. It can be, you could have worked very, very hard and been very, very, very committed and get yourself to a very high level in terms of the punya bhumi. And so you worked for it and you got it, and you'll come back for it. It's exactly like here. You work for something, you strive for something, and if everything goes well, you know, if everything goes well, then you receive the result of that. But the result that you receive is time-bound. That's just how it is. It still can be a wonderful result, but it's a time-bound result. He says, but here, he says, those who worship me, they attain me. And the me that they attain here, the difference is that Krishna as Vishnu, as Ishwara, as Paramatma. There is no place for Ishwara. Ishwara is the whole. So in attaining me is really has to be knowledge, right? Because there's no attaining of the whole, right? The whole is already here. I'm already one with the whole. So the way to attain the whole is through knowledge, is the recognition that I am the whole. That's the way to attain the whole. You're not going to attain me as the Paramatma, as Brahman, as the Paramatma. How can you attain me as the Paramatma? Because in fact, you already are the Paramatma. You already are the Self. So there's no attainment of the Self except through knowledge. And so the prayer then for, and the dedication or the commitment for one who worships me is, Swamiji says this nicely in his commentary, it's, May I gain the antakarna shuddhi, the purity of mind that is necessary, you know, in order to know you. And that is the prayer. May I know you, who you are, what you are. You know, how is it that I am you? All of these things. How can I know that? Please make me, help me to understand that. Give me the antakarna shuddhi, the purity of mind that I need in order to be able to gain that knowledge. And so, in that way, through those who worship me, who are intent on me, then those things that they will gain in order to know me. That's what these next verses are going to deal with. So let's go to the next verse. And he starts talking about that. Patram pushpam palam toyam. Patram pushpam palam toyam. Yo me bhaktya prayachati. Yo me bhaktya prayachati. Tadaham bhaktyupahritam, tadaham bhaktyupahritam, ashnami prayatatmanaha, ashnami prayatatmanaha, patram, pushpam, palam, toyam, yah me bhaktya prayachati tat aham bhakti upahritam ashnami prayata atmanaha. This is a famous verse often quoted. It says, patra. Patram is a leaf. Pushpam, a flower. Palam, a fruit. Toyam, water. So a leaf, a flower, a fruit, water. Yaha, he who may to me bhaktya with devotion gives. Brayachi gives. He who offers me, he who gives to me with bhakti, with shraddha, with devotion, he who offers me a leaf or a flower or a fruit or water. Tad aham bhakti upahritam ashnami. Ashnami, I take that, I receive that, which has been offered with bhakti. Bhakti upahritam means it's been offered. I receive that which has been offered with bhakti by one who is priyata atmanaha, means by one whose mind is pure. By one whose mind is pure. For one whose mind is pure, I receive that. The idea is whatever a person offers me, you know, with bhakti, if something is offered to me with bhakti, whether it be even a leaf or a drop of water, or a simple flower or a piece of fruit, whatever it is that is offered to me with devotion, I receive that thing which has been given with that bhakti, that by one whose mind is pure, means one whose mind is prayata means, Swamiji takes it in the Bhasha, they take it as shuddhi pudehe. Prayata atmanaha shuddha. Shuddha means purified. Buddhi, one whose mind has been purified, means the mind has that antakarana shuddhi, right, is intent on me. I receive that. So, I think it's in this verse, Swamiji tells the story. It's really nice. You have to read the story in his Bhasha, but I'll just tell it to you. Because in this verse, all it says is this: whoever offers me something with devotion, I receive that. That's all it says. That which is offered with devotion, whoever offers it with devotion, I receive that. That thing that's been given to me with devotion, I receive it. And so in order to understand this, Swamiji tells the story that there was this one man, Sadhana, I forget his name, doesn't matter, but there was this one man who was actually grew up with Krishna and was a good friend of Krishna's. And Krishna had become very famous and a rich, very wealthy king and highly respected. You know, not everybody recognized him as an avatar, you know, but everybody had tremendous respect, and Krishna was a king, he had tremendous wealth and all of this. And his friend, who was a brahmana, was very, very poor. And so his wife started saying, you must go to Krishna and ask for some help, because we don't have anything. You don't have any food. We don't have anything. Please go. You must go. And this brahmana would continually say, no, he didn't feel right about going and asking Krishna for something like that. He didn't want to. But his wife talked him into it. So finally he agreed to go. And then he said, but I must take him something, because you don't go to see somebody like Krishna and not have something to give, to offer. And so they didn't have anything, but his wife had been putting something away, this little rice poha, had been putting some away. And so she had like three little round things of this poha, and she wrapped it all together in a rag and gave it to the brahmana to take to Krishna. And so the brahmana went, and he put the poha in with his things, and put the rag in with his things. And he went, and when Krishna saw him coming, he went and greeted him and washed his feet and did all of this, made such a big to-do about his friend coming. And his friend was feeling kind of shy. the Brahmana was feeling kind of shy, and Krishna said, "Didn't you bring me anything?" And then the friend, here Krishna was so wealthy and he had all of this, everything was in gold and all of this, and he didn't feel very comfortable bringing out this poha, you know. And so Krishna went and searched for it. So he knew he brought him something. So he searched in his bag for it, and he pulled this thing out, and he found it, you know. And so then he was so happy to have it, and he opened it. And so here these three things were. And he was so happy, and he started to eat it. And so he ate the first one, you know, and he was enjoying it so much. And then he ate the second one, and he was enjoying it. And then his wife came, Krishna's wife came, and took the third one. And wouldn't let him have it, you know. Because if he had taken, as he received each one, you know, much was given to the Brahmana. Because just by the act of receiving the gift, so much was given that if she would have let Krishna take the third one, then this sadhana, whatever the Brahmana's name, would own the whole world, the whole universe. So he had to stop that. And so the Brahmana was so, he didn't know anything that this was happening, because as he was eating it in where he lived, where the wife was, every bite he took, the whole area became full of life and wealth and riches and fruits and fields full of grains and all water, and his house turned into this beautiful palace, and all of these things were happening. But the Brahmana didn't know any of that. And so he was so elated to see Krishna and to be with him and to be received like this, that he forgot to ask him for anything. He didn't even ask him for anything. And then he went home, and as he got near the home, he realized that the whole environment was totally changed. Everything was changed. Everything was so beautiful. And when he came home, he couldn't even believe, is this the same place? And then he saw, you know, all of the fields were lush with grain. All of the rivers were flowing with pure water. There were fruit trees, and he had a beautiful palace, and his wife came running out, and that's the story. And so Prabhupada tells this really well in his little commentary there. And so the idea is the prayer itself is the reward, you know. As you pray, you know, or as you have that shraddha, that itself, you know, as Krishna, as the Lord receives that prayer, that is the punya, that is a tremendous blessing. So that's why as Krishna was eating, you know, this old poha, as he was eating it, he was receiving it. And here actually what they say is ashnami, which means to eat. So as the Lord eats that, you know, we say as he receives it in English, we say, but it literally says as he eats that, what that which is being offered, as he receives it, that itself is the huge blessing. That itself is the antikarma shuddhi. So that's what this means. You know, it's he who gives anything to me is Bhagawan, you know, with that bhakti, whether it even be a little leaf or some a flower or some a fruit or some water, I eat that, I receive that, you know, I receive that which has been offered with bhakti by one whose mind is pure, whose mind is intent on me. And so then he says, now to follow that up, he goes, yet karoshi yirashnasi yajuhoshi tadasiyat, yajuhoshi tadasiyat, yet tapasyasi kaunteya, yet tapasyasi kaunteya, tat kurushwa padarpana, tat kurushwa padarpana, yet karoshi, yet ashnasi, yet juhoshi tadasiyat, yet tapasyasi kaunteya, tat kurushwa mat arpanam. So he says, whatever you do, yet karoshi, whatever you do, yet ashnasi, whatever you eat, so whatever you do, whatever you eat, that which you do, that what you do, that what you eat. Yet Juhoshi, that which you offer in terms of ritual, whatever rituals you do, Tet Juhoshi, Dadasi, yet, and whatever you give of Dhanam, as Dhanam, whatever you offer, whatever you give to others, whatever you give, yet Tapasyasi, whatever you do as tapas, whatever are your austerities, you know, the austerities and the disciplines, whatever disciplines you follow or austerities that you follow, then, hey Kaunteya, hey Arjuna, son of Kuti, Tat Kurushwa, may you do that Mad Arpanam as a worship of me, as a worship to me. That's the whole Karma Yoga, you know? So in the first one, the first verse, it's, you know, whatever you offer to me with devotion, you know, I receive that. I receive that from you. So then, whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever rituals you do, whatever things that you give, whatever austerities, whatever you do, do that, you know, as an arpana, you know, as Karma Yoga, do that as a worship of me, all of your actions. That really is the Karma Yoga Buddhi. That's where normally we do an action, or anything we do is to gain a particular result, you know, but a result within duality. But what if the result that I am really seeking is Antakarna Shuddhi? Means, what if the result I'm really seeking is moksha? In other words, I do everything that I do is really for the sake of Ishvara, in order to neutralize all of my raga dveshas, my likes and dislikes. If everything that I do is for the sake of Ishvara, you know, is for the sake of knowledge, is for the sake of moksha, is for the sake of Antakarna Shuddhi, then I do have a reason for my action. It's not that we don't know the immediate result that we're going to get from the action, but is the immediate result of the action what I am primarily seeking? You know, like for instance, in India, you know, there's so many rituals that are done, that can be done, the ritual can be done and is often done as what we call a kamya karma. Means the particular ritual is done in order to achieve swargaloka or heaven world. That's why the ritual is done. Or to receive another better life. So this is the point of that ritual. But the reason that I may be doing the ritual is really not to gain a better next birth or to gain swargaloka, but I do it for the purpose of gaining antakarna shuddhi. So that is my sankalpa, right? That's my sankalpa. What if I go to work, every day, you know, and do a good job? I'm not doing a good job to get a pay raise, even though I may get the pay raise. I'm doing the good job as my duty for antakarna shuddhi. So everything is done for the sake of antakarna shuddhi. Second one today. It's a big one. We're on a very solid foundation here, so we should be okay.
That one was stronger.
That was longer. Huge.
Is that right?
Quick?
No.
But I never
heard Tibby.
Tibby!
I was here when the bridge collapsed.
Be careful with the pain.
Yeah. Me too.
I could see the fire from the hills.
Me too.
Where?
Come on.
What part? Do they have earthquakes in Germany? You don't have them.
She'll be okay. I just didn't want her to be afraid.
No.
What?
I thought I heard it.
I did too. That's what I'm whistling.
Really?
Is she in the bedroom?
She might be.
I thought I heard it.
When I'm just lying there thinking, that was really intense.
Look under the bed, Rada.
I'm glad the roof didn't collapse.
For those of you listening online, we just had probably something like a 5-point earthquake.
Yeah. Because today the other one was 4, 3.2
today.
We
had one earlier today that was a little bit less. I heard anywhere from 3.9 to 4.2 maybe. Mm-hmm. That was about 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Do you remember that car in Berkeley that used to drive around after the earthquake and it had the smashed in roof? And it had the time on his license plate.
Oh, is that right?
No. Yeah. He drove that thing around. Yeah. It was kind of cool. It was 4:30 p.m. or something he had on.
Let me just give her one more whistle.
Yeah.
I'm sure she's fine, but I just don't want her to be afraid.
Hey. Mm. Okay. It's okay.
Are you okay, Peter?
No, I'm okay.
They don't have earthquake night in Germany.
She's like, I'm coming in.
Hi, Tibbo.
Diddy.
Are
you okay? Yeah, she's waiting for mommy.
Maybe she needs a salmon chunk.
Big one.
Fifth one today.
I meant to ask how it felt here today. Well, I guess I found out.
Why? Where were you then?
I was at home and I saw I happened to be in the front yard, but the corner of the house really moved. So much that I thought, stupid me, I mean, I've lived here all my life, but I thought, it was the first thing that a truck hit the other side of the house because it was so sharp and quick, and I could see the corner of the house moving.
Yeah. What's this?
Well, you were outside then, huh?
Pardon?
Did the news predicted this?
No, they can't predict earthquakes.
Oh, they
can't? No. No.
But you know, the best predictor is really animals. They always feel it before. Like, they were. My friend was with her dogs, and they completely freaked out before she actually felt the earthquake, you know? They just sense it. It's amazing.
I think they can hear it.
And they can maybe be able to hear it before.
Yeah, it did affect her because she'd seen in the eyes and went, what's going on?
Why? You know, when we were in the city this afternoon when the earthquake happened,
I was going to call you and see. Yeah,
I was up on the fourth floor, and the epicenter was here in Berkeley.
Jesus.
Did you know that?
Mm. I was home. Yes.
Yeah. It really rocked our building.
Uh-huh. Seriously?
Yeah. We were all sitting there. What is this? We really got shaken. It's a good. I mean, it has a lot of earthquake safety in the building, you know, so it's been good. I was thinking, but it was shocked me when I heard that the epicenter was in Berkeley.
Mm-hmm. So. I also had the thought, you know, this would be a good place to get trapped.
Yeah, we have all our books here.
We're going out. Salmon and Gita.
I was praying for a purified mind.
Yeah, that's great punya for us to have an early, you know, we're right in the middle of Vedanta, so we're safe. Everything's fine here. Online people, it's just quite an earthquake. Oh, you felt it there too, Sheshadri? Interesting. What about you, Kristen?
Did he feel it in Australia?
No, Jagadish didn't feel it, but he hopes all's well with us. Wow, yeah, Kristen got it too. Just 5 seconds after the sound, amazing. Okay.
Now, where were we before we were interrupted?
It's kind of interesting interruption.
Yeah. I know, it's an amazing phenomenon.
Yeah, incredible, huh?
It puts you in one's place. Like, these little ants. You know,
Important.
Wow.
Yeah. In fact, Swamiji and his commentary on these verses, like this Patram Pushpam Palam Yutoyam, this is one of those verses to memorize because actually you can extend it. He even makes a statement I had never heard him in his commentary. I thought about this myself, but I hadn't heard him talk about it. He said, you know, Ishwara, Bhagawan, can be evoked really in any form. You know, like in this, whether you're evoking him as praying to him as in the form of a devata, or as a Buddha, or as a ghost, or, you know, as an ancestor. You know, all over the world they have ancestor worship. All over the world they have deities, and the deities usually are deities that are responsible for some laws. You know, like the laws, maybe the laws of compassion, or they can be fire gods or wind gods or whatever. All over the world there are devatas, and all over the world there are spirit forms, and all over the world there are ancestors. And so the Lord is actually evoked in all of these various forms. And no matter what is offered to Bhagawan in any of these forms, you know, with Shraddha, you know, with devotion, then the Bhagawan receives those offerings. You know, and it doesn't matter what the form of the deity is. It doesn't just have to be a Hindu deity. It's any deity. It's in any way that I'm evoked with Shraddha. This is what Swamiji talks about in his Bhasha, with Shraddha, with Dharma. When you look at Ishwara or as Ishwara or all of the devatas as being an embodiment of Dharma in one form or another, right? Then the way that you invoke the Lord, you're doing different rituals and making different offerings, then if those offerings and those prayers are done with Shraddha, then Bhagawan says, I receive those, right? And that receiving itself is a blessing. So you have to think, you know, in terms of devatas or in terms of the different manifestations of the Lord, they're not just talking about Hindu devatas. It's just the whole universe, you know? And so with the rituals that are performed, like the Indians performing the rain dance, the rain will come. You know, if that ritual is done with Shraddha, it's not just that the Hindu rituals, fire rituals for rain, are needed in order to bring the rains. You know, there's a story that Jung always tells. In fact, whenever there's any gathering in my name talking about Jungian psychology, please tell this story first. You know, before you start it, tell this story first. And the story is called The Rainmaker. And in this story, there is some place in China that is suffering from a great drought. And it's been going on and on and on. All of the crops are dying, the animals are all dying, the people are starting to starve. And so from another province, they bring in the rainmaker. Somebody, you know, who's notably able to, through his prayers and rituals, to bring the rain. And so they bring this fellow in from afar to come and to help them. And so they bring him, and he goes into his little hut, and he doesn't come out for 3 or 4 days. He just comes, he stays there for 3 or 4 days, and everybody's starting to get very antsy, you know, because they need the rain now, not 2 weeks, three, mm-hmm. They need the rain now. So they don't know what on earth he's doing there. So he stays there like 3 or 4 days, and 5 days it goes on, and then all of a sudden the rains start pouring. And he comes out, and they said, "What were you doing? How did you do? What were you doing in there? Why were you in there for so long?" They say, and he says, "You know, when in my area, everything was in the Tao, everything was in order, everything was in the Dharma. The Dharma was alive and well. When I came into this area, it was amiss." It was a miss. And so I had to sit and bring myself back into the Dharma, back into the Tao, in order for the rains to come. Mm. You know, I had to bring myself back into that order in order for the rains to come. Mm. So what I'm saying, it's a beautiful story, you know, and it's a story that was really a favorite of Jung's. In fact, I can give you a copy of it. I usually pass it out to my students at school. But it's the same idea, you know, in all of the different, especially in the East, there's so many different religions, there's so many different ways of evoking the Dharma or evoking the Tao or evoking Ishwara in one form or another. And those all work. And this country too. It's not that prayers have to be in a particular language. They work when they're done with Shraddha. You know, they bless you when they're done with that Shraddha, whatever the form of that worship may be. And so that's why this Patrim Pushpam Pulam, you know, whatever you offer me, even if it be a little piece of flour or some water, whatever it may be, if it's offered with Shraddha, I receive that. And then the idea is that the very that Ishwar is receiving that itself is the that is the blessing. So, so then he says, so whatever you do, whatever, you know, for the mumukshu, the one who wants to know me, whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever rituals you do, whatever you give as donum, as gifts, whatever you give away, whatever austerities you practice, you know, may all of those be done, you know, with this attitude, you know, as a worship, as an offering to me. And that attitude itself is the blessing, because with that attitude is the neutralization of raga dvesha, of your likes and dislikes. It's not that we don't have likes and dislikes. Everybody has likes and dislikes, but they're only problematic if your likes means that if I don't get my way, I'll be miserable. That's the desire template. The raga is, I need this in order to be happy. The dvesha, the dislike, is, I need to get rid of this in order to be happy. And so really, all of our, Swamiji will say, and I think it's true, really, all of our psychological problems that we have to do with the raga dvesha. I need this to be happy. Right? Or I need to get rid of this to be happy. And when what you're doing is really only as a worship for Ishwar, it's not about your raga dvesha. It's not about getting this so that I can be happy, or doing this so that I can be happy. I'm doing this as a worship of Bhagawan. And if I'm doing it as a worship of Bhagawan, then it's contained within Dharma. You don't do a Dharma as a worship of Bhagawan. And so, but what did I follow the laws of Dharma, and I do those things as an Ishwara Arpana Buddhi, it's called. Karma Yoga is Ishwara Arpana Buddhi. I do it with a buddhi, you know, which is one of recognition of the Lord, recognition of Ishwara. Swamiji also says here, and often talks about this, that ritual, he was talking for a while about how the importance of doing ritual or doing some form of of worship, because the form of worship or the action itself will evoke the devotion, will evoke the heart that goes along with that action. But he was talking a little bit about even extending that attitude to what we call pratipaksha bhavana. Pratipaksha bhavana is when, say, I have a hatred, for instance, for somebody. A dislike or a hatred or any one of those emotions that's very uncomfortable to have to live with. If I have let's use the extreme, like he does, a hatred for somebody, then what I will do is as though ritual action of, for example, offering daily a flower to that person. It's not the equivalent of that, offering a flower to that person. Because even though that may seem hypocritical to you, because you don't give flowers to people you hate, so it seems hypocritical, but it isn't in this sense, is that the reason that you're doing that offering is to help you resolve the feeling of hatred that you're having. And so by doing an action which is actually the action is actually the opposite of what you do when you hate somebody, that opposite action will evoke, you know, a feeling that dissipates the hatred. And so this pratipaksha bhavana is something that they use in India a lot for neutralizing, you know, for neutralizing dislikes, likes and dislikes, is to do an action, you know, which by its nature evokes the opposite in order to dissipate the hatred or the dislike or the fear or whatever it is, you know. And so that's just another form of ritual. So then he was going on to say, even if you were to do decide to do, to every day do a puja to the Lord, do some sort of ritual to the Lord every day, even though you don't feel like it, you may not feel like it, or even want to do it, you're doing it as a discipline, nevertheless, when you're doing it, it evokes that love or that feeling of the Lord. Even though you, when you start, you'd rather not be doing it. Swamiji said that, you know, he and his brothers, they used to have to do a rituals in puja that would last maybe 50, 55 minutes, the whole thing. They couldn't have their morning coffee till they did it. So they had to do it in order to get coffee's really big in Chennai, in South India. It's all handmade. It's just wonderful, Madras coffee. And so, but they can't have their morning coffee until they do these rituals. And so they had to do it. They didn't want to do it. They wanted their coffee. But when they would do it, then the very act of doing the ritual would evoke the devotion. And so that's something to remember, that sometimes when your mind, you know, is caught in something, it doesn't want to do something, or it's feeling bitter or sour about something, you do it anyway. And the action drags. It drags the emotion or drags the feeling along with it, you know. And so the action helps to evoke that sense of devotion. And so in that way, it's important. And even if you have that, you know, you set out your day right so that you make a sankalpa, you make a resolve that Ishwararpana Buddhi, whatever I do, you know, is really for my antakarana shuddhi, for moksha, for Ishwar, you know, for my knowledge of Ishwar, for my liberation, for moksha. If I have that resolve, then I go toward the day with a different attitude, because everything becomes as though a worship. It becomes like a puja that I'm doing to Ishwara. For what? So the for what? It's for moksha. Moksha is what? It's knowledge of Ishwara. For knowledge of the Lord, knowledge of the self, really. You know, I require a mind that is free of raga dvesha. Free of raga dvesha means I have vairagya, you know. You're not free of raga dvesha, your likes and dislikes, if you really think that object will make me happy. That's what brings about raga dvesha. It's not like you bring about raga dvesha on your own. Raga dvesha, these likes and dislikes, are evoked by your projection of ananda onto an object. And so if you have as your day, as the attitude for the day, is really, I'm doing these actions not so that I can become happy by the result of the action, but that by my very attitude, by doing it as Ishwararpana Buddhi, I resolve the raga dveshas so that my mind is free to just see the whole creation as Ishwara. That's kind of the attitude there. Everybody see that? So let's stop there. Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamadachate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishate Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Shri Gurupyo Namaha Harihi Om.
Rather, that's so tricky though, huh? For me, I mean, I do puja because, like, I get so much out of it. But there are
But that's the, you get something out of it because that's the bhakti, right?
I get very happy. So that's the like.
Yeah, but that's the benign like. See, moksha, we say moksha and self-knowledge. You have a desire for moksha. You have a desire for self-knowledge. You say that's the only benign desire because it resolves in the in a real fulfillment. You know, like moksha, the self-knowledge resolves in an ananda that doesn't go away. Right? So relationship with Ishwara is a, even relationship with Ishwara is a relationship that doesn't go away. That's, I mean, it's looking at almost on a different level, but you have to, of all the relationships that you have, the one relationship that is constant, that never goes away, and that continually blesses you, is the relationship with Ishwara. In the same way, that's Ishwara means your relationship with the whole, right? As Bhagavan. That never changes, it never varies. Ishwara doesn't change his mind about you and say, you know, it's always a blessing. And similarly, the relationship with the Atma is a relationship of identity, really. That self is always exactly the same, and it's benign. So that relationship is a continual blessing. So when you do puja with shraddha, you know, or ritual with shraddha, you're evoking something that is a blessing, you know, which doesn't turn on you, which doesn't go away. And so that gives the mind a lot of ananda, you know, which is a beautiful thing.
A ritual can
even, be... Even one of the things... Even when you're doing any action in the world, if you're doing it as a puja, that gives a lot of ananda because there's can give a lot of ananda. We can also have other things going on in us, but it can give a lot of ananda because there's no raga dvesha. It neutralizes the raga dvesha. So then when you see it, that time is Ishwara.
So like if you have a job, I think you said that before. Mm-hmm. And you do your job with an intention of serving the Lord. Mm-hmm. So no matter whether the person I take care of is my job, uh-huh. whether that person is going to be happy with me or not, is irrelevant.
It's irrelevant. That's right. It's irrelevant.
That's what my likes and dislikes mm-hmm. yeah. have to be sacrificed.
That's right.
Well, sacrifice such a big suffering more than surrendered.
Your likes and dislikes are no longer what is really important. Because what is important, the reason, what is really behind or the most important thing to you is that relationship with Ishwara, the neutralization of the likes and dislikes is what is primary, not the immediate result of the action. And then also, then you can look at this, your action is in line with Dharma. Because if the action is as Ishwararpana Buddhi, then the action has to be in line with Dharma, at least your perception of it, right? And so you're doing in every situation what is to be done in the situation. What is the best, what is the right thing to do in the situation? What is the best thing to do in the situation? And that's the Arpana Buddhi, the Ishwararpana Buddhi. See what I mean? So it's no longer about you becoming happy or sad. It's about what is appropriate in the situation, and that becomes the worship of Ishwara. So it's not about your likes and dislikes, it's about duty. It's about Dharma. It's about what this moment in the universe is asking of you.
What this mm-hmm. moment in the universe
yeah. is. Yeah. It's like a conversation. It's like a puja. This is Ishwara, and I'm relating to it. I'm relating to Ishwara. And so as I'm relating to Ishwara, then that's the puja.
That's a little more difficult.
Well, it's difficult when we're rub up against something.
Right.
Right.
Right. Personal yeah. relationships.
Yeah. Whenever we rub up against something, that's where the difficulty is, and that's where we bring in that buddhi.
Got it. Right. Thank you.
But in a way, it's also...
Oh, communicate this to Swamiji.
Yeah. Yeah. Please.
Where's Penny?
Penny.
Yeah. Till March. What will Swamiji be teaching? Good. Gita Bhashyam.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Shankar.
Swamiji, I was telling Swamiji we were just doing that Patram Toyam verse.
Huh?
The verse that we were doing, Patram Pushpam Palam Toyam.
Yeah. That's
yes.
And, you know, from the seventh onwards, there is so much Ishvara.
From the seventh onwards.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Tattvada.
Yes.
So that word, that in Tattvamasi, the word that is talked about, from seventh up to 12. And that's why this
daily you offer something with devotion.
Mm-hmm. And that I take it. It's some kind of an action. Action makes an emotion real.
Mm-hmm. Action makes an emotion real.
Something like this, so if you wish somebody was engaging,
yes.
To act out. So, you do something in order to make it real. Suppose that if it is real, you do. Or if you want to make it real, you do. And that's taking and making.
Yeah.
Take it and make it.
Good, Swamiji.
Okay.
He's coming back in December?
That was Swamiji on the phone.
In the summer.
In the summer. He will come in December.
Oh.
It's too soon. Okay. Yeah, he can't manage that, but he'll probably come in the summer. Yeah. That was sweet.
So I noticed in the commentary, to ride my little hobby horse a little bit here, because I've been thinking lately about, and I asked Swamiji this question, uh-huh, not once but twice, uh-huh, and I'm not done with it yet, about the role that effort and work might play into this,
mm-hmm,
into coming to knowledge. And I liked what he said. I finally understood more of the role of it, because he said, yes, to gain anticardana shuddhi takes work.
Mm-hmm.
Does take effort.
Yeah.
Knowledge doesn't take effort.
Yeah.
But getting to anticardana shuddhi takes effort. Takes
absolutely
work.
Yeah, it takes consciousness, and it takes that pretty picture bhavana, so attitude, so many
and
things.
And you have to do it.
And you have to do it, yeah. But and then I'll also say, and you also have to get yourself to class. That takes work.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But once you're there, the knowledge taking place, as long as your mind is there and your ears are open, knowledge takes place. There's no action involved with knowledge.
Right.
But there is an action involved in anticardana shuddhi. Right, like a look at all the inner child work we do, or all the dharma that you do, all the trying to neutralize your likes and dislikes, that all requires effort. Yeah.
Action.
Working on ourselves. We even say it, we're working on ourselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of the effort is attitudinal, but that requires effort. Because you're bringing in a thought. You're bringing in an emotion to replace another emotion, you know, or you're making a decision not to act out on an emotion that you're having, you know. You're making a decision to do this instead of that, and you know, it all requires, it's all work in a way.
So you would call that devotion or offering as well, right?
Well, if you're looking at everything as, you know, karma yoga, then everything you do is really for that antakarna shuddhi. Sometimes we say it very simply, everything's a sadhana.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's not a sadhana when everything's fine, because everything's Ishwara, and then that's its knowledge. But when your mind is being pulled out because of raga dvesha, you know, into some sort of an upset stance, that's your sadhana. That's also, you know, that's also Bhagavan's offering to you. You know, it's like, here, work on this. this is your task right now.
So this offering of a flower, you could offer a contemplation or a meditation to...
You can offer every moment of your life.
But a meditation is the same as offering a flower then, isn't it?
Yeah, the attitude.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that you offer with bhakti, you know?
You mean a mental rather than physical?
An activity creating a certain mental state.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right?
Yeah.
Because I personally don't feel drawn to puchas in the way where we have like rituals at this point. It's just not. But
me neither.
Like praying. It's like. Yeah, so I have an interesting relationship. I grew up Catholic, but you know, there's a whole mixture of things. But for me, it's more like, can I be present with this person? You know, I mean, that feels like the puja in that moment.
That's right. Can I be? But that's a beautiful thing, to be present. Can I be present with this person? Can I be present with this moment?
Mm-hmm.
Then you're transcending raga dvesha. Because then it's not like, I have to have this moment be this way in order for me to be present. Otherwise, I'm being present with what I want it to be,
mm-hmm.
and this isn't it.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Yeah. But yeah, that's a nice way to say it. Can I really be present to this person? Can I really be present to this moment? Can I be present also to this complex? Or to this feeling?
So when the scriptures talk about puja, I think what comes to mind immediately is the rituals, which I've seen in India and so on. So, but that's not really meant then, is that right?
Well, that's the ritual. The ritual is a reality and a metaphor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because the karma yoga is toward the whole world. That karma yoga buddhi is toward every action. That's why it says, you know, whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you know, whatever ritual do you do, whatever act of giving, whatever tapas you do, whatever you do, period, let that be, you know, a worship of me, madarpanam, he says.
And he says it works. And in Swamiji's commentary, it doesn't matter if you're Muslim and praying in that form.
Exactly.
Or Christian, as much as it irks me.
It doesn't matter, because you're still evoking with Shraddha.
That's right.
You know, so I can see where you know, I'm drawn to puja. And at the same time, you know, I feel for me, puja gives me a lot of shraddha.
Yeah.
Just pronouncing, just although I pronounce it wrong, according to Lisa most of the time, but pronouncing the words,
yeah.
the Sanskrit words
yeah.
alone
have yeah.
a tremendous powerful effect on
yeah.
me. They give me deep, deep peace and clarity.
Yeah.
And at the same time, you know, I can see the point of, you know, if you create a split in a way, you and God, you know?
It doesn't have to create that split, though.
No, but it does.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at it, I'm seeing, I'm noticing it, but that doesn't
yeah.
mean I stop doing puja because,
yeah.
like, I get too much out of it.
Yeah. Well, you're enjoying the relationship. I don't really do very much actual ritual. I'm just not drawn to that, but I love chanting. You know? And I just think it's just something I love to do. Because it's absorbing of my mind and it has a sanctity of thousands of years and there's something very powerful
so
about it.
So I'm not doing puja. I'm chanting, that's what I'm doing. But I'm having the CD of the puja.
Oh, I see. Yeah. You're.
But
yeah.
I'm chanting, I'm not doing puja.
Yeah.
Although I do throw flowers.
Yeah, you do mentally. It's called manasa puja.
Yeah.
But, you know, even whether you are having a relationship with Ishvara, which really is the karma yoga buddhi, there's the jiva having a relationship with Ishvara. That's a karma yoga buddhi, right? That brings about antakarana shuddhi. So there's nothing to worry about there. You know, when at the moments when you're just seeing everything as Ishvara, as you're seeing I am the whole, that's jnana. That's not really a karma yoga buddhi. There's only Ishvara here.
Mm-hmm.
But then we also do... You know, for jnani can also do chants and rituals and all of those things, but for the jnani it's going to all be mitya. It's still beautiful. It's something very beautiful that exists within the creation. Or it can be, you know, as a mumukshu, you can really be evoking that relationship between me and Ishvara. I want those Ishvara's blessings. I want the antakarana shuddhi. I want this knowledge. I'm asking Ishvara to give me that knowledge. That's karma yoga.
Hmm.
You know, and that's the relationship we should have with Ishvara in order to neutralize the likes and dislikes.
Well, how does that correlate with being present to a complex?
Well, whether you're... See, I look at whether it's mental, something going on emotionally... You mentally, or what we call externally, means something that I'm perceiving outside of my body, the external world. All of those are external.
Mm-hmm.
Right? In other words, I can come into relationship with an emotion, with a thought, with a perception. How do I come into relationship with it? How do I hold it? So I can hold an emotion in the same way that I can be present to an emotion, I can hold the emotion. In the same way that I can be present to a person
mm-hmm.
or to a situation.
Mm-hmm.
That same way I can be present to that emotion. And that's what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
There's still subject-object relationships, so anything that can be objectified, you can be present to that.
And how is that an offering, or how is it this devotion?
Well, Martina was talking about just, and for her, being just present to something. Being there present to something, you know, is something that is, in a way, an offering, is a puja.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true, because when you're present to something, really, you're not asking it to be different, you're
mm-hmm.
simply being with it.
Right.
And so the raga dvesha is not a question there. It's I'm trying to be with you. And so whether that be, the, you know, like an inner child, a little child, an upset child, I want to be with you. That means that whatever it is being held, is not being judged, is not being tried to be made different. It's just simply being with. You know, and that eliminates the raga dvesha, because that's not what you're doing. What you're doing is being with. You're not judging. You're not being with if you'll be like that.
Whipping it into shape.
Yeah. You're not being with... I'm not being with you if you act like that, or, you know.
Yeah.
I'm just being with you.
It would be so perfect if you'd only change a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And that's how our mind normally fluctuates.
Well, you can say that same thing about yourself, or your own mind, you know.
Well, that's what I mean. Anything that you can objectify, you can be with, you can be present to. Mm. Anything that's objectifiable. Mm. You know, and so we tend to need the world to be in one way or another. And just having that as an offering, really, that is itself a puja. Say you, that's an Ishvara Arpana Buddhi, just doing that alone, because the instant you do that, now it's not, I want this or that. It's a puja to this is what is, this is Ishvara, like that. And present to it as it is, and present to Bhagavan as it is. And that's, and then I can act from that position too. You know? But the action is not, is more of an offering rather than I need this in order to be happy. It's more of an offering to whatever the situation is needed in the situation. So it's objective. That's what Swamiji always calls objective.
Mm-hmm.
It's an objective way to be, because your subjective desires aren't what is ruling the situation. What's ruling the situation is the situation itself, not my own needs in the situation. So actually, I like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's very, very clean and also very accessible for Westerners, that way of thinking about it.
Well, that it kind of like turns the emotions into objects, and they're just presenting themselves to you.
Well, I mean, that is great if we can have that relationship with the emotions,
mm-hmm.
that I can actually be with them.
Whether they're relaxed or tense, it's the same.
Yeah, and it's especially good if they're tense. If they're relaxed, I don't have to be with them. I'm enjoying them.
No problem. Oh, this is a great offering.
Those are fine.
Yeah.
That's all. They're relaxed. That's all Ishvara. I can just appreciate, you know. But it's when it's tense or painful, then what? Then what do? Or when I feel to reject.
Mm-hmm.
But Swamiji's also, in his little talk here, he also brought up this other thing, that sometimes it's very difficult to break the spell of an emotion, you know? And so what he was saying is that if you do an action, you know, like say you have a hurt emotion,
mm-hmm.
and you can say that, well, you know, I forgive that person, or whatever, kind of try to neutralize it just on a mental level, emotional level. That is not as powerful, anywhere near as powerful, actually, because I personally had experience with this, I've used this one, as actually doing an action. That's what I was talking earlier about, this pratipakshabhavana. If you do an action, like say you send a card, or you give a flower, or you actually physically say something out loud to that person, you know, you do a physical action, and that itself, that does a lot to break the spell of the emotional hold, that whatever is going on in that dynamic, you know, is creating in you to do a physical action of some sort. Physical action means I'm taking it out into the world. I'm not just doing it internally, though internally helps also. But to actually take it out into the world is really, really helpful.
I remember once doing that with somebody that really, really acted in a, really did me a disservice, really did done me wrong. And I remember being so upset about it and just so righteously angry for such a long time that I came to the realization that I, for my own well-being, it was...
Yeah.
It was the only thing that I could do to save myself, really.
Yeah.
It was really a question of save yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it really helped. It did.
It neutralized.
It did. It went away after that. It was, oh, finally, I could move on.
It's so powerful, you know?
Oh.
It's so powerful.
Especially when you feel so justified.
Yeah.
Self-righteous.
Oh.
I used to get so mad about that somebody... I just didn't like the way the laws worked, the way Bhagavan worked, where somebody could do a real disservice to you or do something that was really unjust, but you are not allowed to do anything back that's unjust or, you know, mm-hmm. eye for an eye type of thing. Because if you do, you will be punished.
Penitence.
You know?
Yeah.
And I used to think that that's just not fair. Why? I get so mad about that.
So how'd you get out of that?
Because one adharma, you know, is not going to be counteracted by another adharma. I'll have to pay for my own adharma. This person's going to pay for their adharma. Then I do an adharma to...
On it goes.
You know, like get angry or retaliate with some anger or something. Everything just gets much worse.
Yeah.
You know, and you feel terrible also.
Yeah.
And so there's... I used to feel like I just am put in these situations where I have to swallow it. You know? So you have to come at it from a whole different point of view.
That, you know, that, that place I live in, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like upstairs. Yeah, every time I go into that place, you know, I have panic and fears because I don't want to get upset. And then I walk in there, bam, 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 TV, and there I go, you know. And then last night, for some reason, and it's because I was doing evening arati, puja, evening arati, the anger came up, and it was like, I was so painful, but I just kept chanting along, you know? And then by the time of, at the end of the arati, it kind of had cooled down, literally.
Cooled down, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then I ran into the woman this morning, and it was like, you know, it was like, part of, it was, because I've been trying to fake it and make it with her for quite a long, for almost a year now. And it's like, it's gotten to the place like where like the faking it had a slack time. And I was making it already.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah, and we're like, wow, that has changed.
Yeah.
So you don't have to fake it anymore, huh?
I don't think so, Ed, but unless I get triggered again. It's a nightmare when you get triggered with that anger. And they shouldn't do that. And the poor woman is 80-some years old, for God's sake. You know, but all rational goes out of the door, you know, when that dislike shows up like that.
You know, I think all of this is why it's so really important to kind of understand the dynamics of the mind, how to work with the mind. That's why this Ishwaropana Buddhi and Karma Yoga, all of these things, you know, being present, all of these things are things we learn along the way, or that the Bhagavad Gita, the things that Sampradaya has to teach us, all of the kind of the tricks of the trade, you know, of actually how to be with the mind in a way that neutralizes the likes and dislikes. You have to understand how to do it.
I assume that breathing thing that you showed through us, inhaling all the anger and hatred, and exhaling softness.
Yeah, Panglin.
Without trying to change it.
Yeah.
Change itself. Diffuse the intention.
Yeah.
The breathing, yeah.
I talked about that in this class, didn't I?
Yeah, last time. Yeah. Last time we were here. Wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. That's really...
And Peter wanted to keep it simple. I mean, I was in agreement with him, but you were going to do count of four in and a count of four out.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
That all got a little complex.
Yeah, that was different. That was different. That was...
Count of four is too complex for the boys.
We like it simple.
That was great. It worked. You know, don't fix what ain't broke.
That was two different things.
But somehow, I think last class or the class before, you said like one of the practices is to always bring the mind back. Bring it back. And it's funny because I heard that for years, you know. But somehow, when you said it, that
it
night,
was the right time.
It was the right time. I was really like, right. Yeah, and I think that's where effort comes in.
Mm, that's an effort. That's
yeah,
right.
It's just like where I feel like I haven't really done much effort. I know it.
Yeah.
I know when it goes off. But the story is somehow still too interesting.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, the story is too interesting. That's a good story.
I know where it goes and all of that, but it's
yeah, right.
Yeah. Really, I feel like this, or great, and you still don't want to bring it back. Oh, I cannot make that. That really helped me. This
too. Yeah. That's
can I bring it back instead? It's actually not interesting. Yeah. And it leads to places I don't even want to go.
That you don't want to go, and it's not worth it. Yeah. But, you know, just like a little child that's running off, you go and get him or her, and, you know, you bring her back, and run off again, and you bring her back. And as your mind's like that too, it runs off and gets on the wrong track.
Right.
And then you have to bring it back. And it's a good thing to do. But you're right, it's like your emotions can kind of want to go on with that story until you have another set of emotions that say no. The buddhi comes and says, no, we don't need to go on with that story. So I think we better come back right now.
Yeah, because
you're
going to
burn your fingers there.
Because there is that there is a charge.
Yeah,
that, which
a
is
charge.
The reward, you
yeah,
know. So you
charge,
kind of, it's like a drug or something,
I
think. You know?
Yeah.
But it's not helpful to go off.
No, it's not helpful.
No.
And sooner or later you realize, you keep realizing, that realization, that vairagya keeps growing. Mm-hmm. The vairagya is really... No, this isn't worth it. This is not worth it.
Yeah.
It's amazing how many times I go there before I actually see that, you know. I know exactly where it ends up. I even watch it going there.
Yeah.
And I still,
don't
make the cut.
Still, the monk with the cookie jar, right? Isn't that
That's true.
Yeah, that's exactly that example.
Yeah. And it's amazing how long you can be beaten to a pulp as you're holding on to those nets, you know?
Yeah, it's like...
Until finally you've just been beaten, stood down so badly that you finally let go and scamper off. So I think, you know, as you get a little wisdom, you let go much more quickly. I think it gets to the point where as soon as you hear the guy coming out with the stick, you hear him move, you just let go immediately.
The rustling of footsteps.
Yeah.
Oh no! Don't go there.
Yeah. It gets to where you know even before you start. You know, you
even watch putting your hand in, you know.
Yeah, it in a way it's kind of just stupid, you know.
You just catch it earlier and earlier and earlier until then it doesn't come anymore.
Yeah. Well, I like these small classes.
Mm-hmm. I love these small classes.
How's everybody online? Yeah, Swamiji's, Jagadish Swamiji's going tomorrow. Going back. He's going to come again and probably come back here in the summer, not over Christmas though, which nobody expects him to come over Christmas.